Heather Hodge is going to present on this portion of our panel. Heather's the Director for Chronic Disease Prevention at YUSA, and in this role, Heather provides at YUSA, and Heather provides leadership and direction for her team, and they work to scale and disseminate programs like the Diabetes Prevention Program that are designed to reduce risk. She has built a national infrastructure for this program and for Moving for Better Balance, our falls prevention program, through public-private partnerships, which is something a lot of people talk about with the Diabetes Prevention Program, our connection to health insurers and things like that to make things sustainable. So, Heather. Okay.
Thank you. No disclosures. And here is my, I missed the red memo, so it's a purple box. I'm going to talk about diabetes prevention. So, briefly about the statistics, most people are really afraid of what's below the surface. And when you think about the iceberg and the fact that we have a huge bolus of people, if you will, in this 86 million who are below the surface. And unfortunately, only 10% know that they're at risk. We have a tremendous amount of work to do to help raise awareness when it comes to individuals in screening for prediabetes. But we know that prevention works. There are the National Institutes of Health funded the Diabetes Prevention Program study in the mid-90s. It was published in 2002 in the New England Journal of Medicine. That went on to be translated 28 different times into community settings, into all types of settings, really trying to figure out what is the most effective and efficient way to get people to reduce their risk for type 2 diabetes. And in the original study, which is the study that the YMCA's Diabetes Prevention Program is based on, it was shown to reduce the number of new cases of type 2 diabetes by 58%. And by 71% for individuals over the age of 60. So when Monica talked about healthy aging, we also have some work, and I have a session tomorrow that's going to talk a little bit about the work we've done with Medicare age individuals. The program's led by a trained lifestyle coach. So Valerie talked about all the things that we do to get programs ready. So training is one of those things. It's a year long. There's 19 sessions in the first 6 months and 6 sessions in the second 6 months. It's open to all community members. You do not have to be a YMCA member to participate in the program, and in fact, most of our participants are not YMCA members. It is one of CDC's approved curriculums. Organizations submit their curriculums to the CDC for under the National Diabetes Prevention Program, and we have one of, I think, what is now 8 or 9 curriculums that is approved. We're serving individuals 18 years of age or older who are overweight and at risk for prediabetes, either based on a blood test, previous diagnosis of gestational diabetes, or if there is no blood test, a qualifying risk score on a risk assessment. And in the program, participants are working to reduce their weight by 5 to 7% and increase their physical activity minutes to 150 minutes per week. So at this point, our scale and reach, we're in 187 of the associations, but they're delivering the program at over 1,300 locations around the community, of which 60% of them are not in a YMCA. They're in the libraries. They're in federally qualified health centers. They're at employer sites. And we are in 43 states. We've served over 36,000 participants. This PowerPoint slide was submitted before we had our new numbers out at the end of September. We're over 37, almost at 38,000 now. We have trained over 3,200 lifestyle coaches. So we have a tremendous training. And people have to pass that training. It isn't just a sort of everyone passes. We have a 91% pass rate. But there are some individuals who have really great doing one-on-one using Listen First, or what we call Listen First, which is motivational interviewing. But they have a hard time taking that into a group setting because this is a group program. At the end of those first 16 sessions, which typically happen weekly, we see a 4.6% average weight loss. At the end of the year, weight loss continues. It's about 5.5%. And we're seeing 154 minutes reported on average for physical activity per week. But one of the things we had to figure out immediately was we have to simplify the referral process. And we have to figure out and work with healthcare, and we've done that through partnerships with the American Medical Association and other organizations, to figure out how we can build it into the workflow, whether it's point of care, so at the instance of service, or actually what we've really seen be effective is retrospectives, going back through The healthcare records, the great thing about EMRs is the opportunity to go back into the electronic medical record and look for patients who likely fit the profile, who based on those qualification criteria could participate in this program. And when they get outreach, and whether it's a letter or a phone call from someone out of the doctor's office, the healthcare provider's office, they're far more likely to take the program. And in one instance, we had a yield of a 40% return on a retrospective letter, which is the first time we had a capacity issue in a local YMCA who all of a sudden had to say, wow, we have to make sure we have got freed up coaches to be able to meet that kind of demand. And then really thinking about how to work in an electronic format with the referral process. So, one of the things that we're doing around this is looking at technology vendors to help simplify the referral. So whether it's point of care or from the YMCA's perspective, how do we capture that information? How do we ease the referral process in for the healthcare provider? And then provide the feedback back. That's the critical part. Don't forget that feedback loop, because healthcare providers want to know what you're providing for their patients. On the right-hand side, just the different types of referral sources that participants self-report to us. So it's neck and neck between marketing materials and healthcare providers, but we know that when we slice our outcomes by the healthcare provider, the physician, when referred by a physician, those participants get the greatest weight loss when it comes from that healthcare provider space. So one of the things that's really important for providers of this type of thing is to think about sustainability from the get-go. And part of Valerie's process when she talks about program delivery isn't just about sort of things like training, but it's also understanding costs, because programs have to exist beyond grant funding. And when we do this type of effort, why that's important is in local communities, whether it's YMCAs or community-based organizations who are doing this, if you're going to build a bridge for healthcare, you can't go away when the grant funding ends. You really, if you're going to keep your credibility with the community, you have to be able to make sure that your program and understand your costs so that your program sustains itself. And I'll have a couple of slides that talk just a little bit about costs. But multiple types of payment models also have to be taken into account. In this program, we've been fortunate enough to work with 30 different health insurance companies who are paying for the program, and hundreds of employers who are paying for the program either on invoices or in a claims-based process that is a performance-based. So the YMCAs are taking on some risk. They're only getting paid if they're getting people to attendance and weight loss outcomes, which requires billing codes. So late last year, YMCA of the USA, we wrote and submitted a CPT code application, and in February defended that CPT code for a Category 3 tracking code that will go live in January. So there is a 0403T, which is the code, is a new billing code that will be available for organizations who are delivering the diabetes prevention program to actually submit claims to health insurance companies. You still have to obviously get the payers and contract with the payers to get reimbursement, but it's a way in which a community-based organization is trying to drive that sustainable change and bridge the healthcare to community gap. So again, when it comes to knowing the total cost, there are some things related to fixed costs and variable costs that are going to be really important. And here's kind of a breakdown of where our 2014 data is. What's really important here is that the bulk of the cost of this type of program fits in the fixed cost versus the variable cost of the program. So it really is only about 19% is our variable cost, and that's the cost of actually delivering the sessions, lifestyle coach materials and participant incentives or measurement and evaluation costs. The bulk of the overhead really comes from the staff time it takes to get that person into the program. That's a huge driver of cost. And so in 2014, our costs came into about $702 per person. So there's quite a bit of that, as I mentioned, is in fixed. But it had come down from $814 in 2012. We continue to try to drive down costs. But volume, when you have enough volume, you spread that fixed costs across. And we have had YMCAs who have gotten their costs from $702 down to under $400. So we know that the volume and reducing payment as a barrier, it can be a key driver to spreading out those costs. So you have to understand the market you're trying to serve. And this is really important in the 1422 funding, because you're really targeting low-income or Medicaid vulnerable populations, is how we typically refer to that audience. But financial hardship's an issue, so you have to be able to manage that. Not everyone's going to have this in their insurance yet. So understand the value of what you're offering. I hope we remove the word free when we talk about programs. Programs are never free. There's a cost associated. But if you can cover as much of that cost or work with each consumer to help them, then you create a value to the service that you're providing. And then understanding what the payer market will pay for is going to be critical. And in the diabetes prevention space, we've been very fortunate that when you look at the costs associated with diabetes and the opportunity to reduce that cost by preventing it, it really sort of helps you make the case. So you have to think about a lot of infrastructure, though. If you're going to do this, whose national provider ID are you using? And now there's a billing code that you can use, but you have to be able to contract for that. And how are you going to manage eligibility and claims and recruitment and engagement and HIPAA? So as community-based organizations, really understanding how you're protecting privacy and health data is going to be critical. But this is a big slide here, but what's important to know is that in our markets where we have payers, they can serve over 1,000% more participants when there's a payer than when they're just trying to recruit self-pay. So payment for services is going to be really critical. So I said I'd do this pretty quickly. And I'll be available later if folks have other questions about DPP, because I know there were some folks in here who had specific questions. But when we think about the power of this type of national network, you have to really focus on evidence-based programming and then partner with healthcare, because typically you may not already be serving the population you're trying to recruit. 70% of our program participants are not Y members. You have to focus on removing costs as a barrier. That's critical. I can't emphasize that enough. Whether you do that through health plans or you do that through grants, just know that if you do it through grants, you have to also build a plan for sustaining that. And then collect and use your data for improvement of delivery. That part's really critical. Don't just collect the data for fun. Actually use it for improvement.